This is Terry Beatley, your host of What If We've Been Wrong? I'm shining light into some dark places so that beauty, goodness, and truth defeat the schemes of the enemy. It's true, people are perishing for lack of knowledge, and we're instructed to have nothing to do with the evil deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. That's what I do on What If We've Been Wrong? Rethink, explore, and uncover some hidden truths so that more people can experience an abundant life and the joy of being set free from the shackles that hold us in prison. Welcome to What If We've Been Wrong? Have so many opportunities to meet many successful business people, and their stories inspire me. Usually, they're stories of vision, perseverance, the school of hard knocks, which many times lead to these business people's successes. And I'm going to make a more concerted effort to interview a lot of these entrepreneurs on my show. And you may be wondering, well, what does that have to do with a radio show called What If We'd Been Wrong? And I'm going to tell you. It's because America was built on the backs of entrepreneurs, on small business, on creative thinking. And my guest today is Bob Williamson. He's a renowned businessman and a serial entrepreneur, which I love that description. He's achieved national acclaim for his business acumen and his heart for philanthropy. All told, Bob Williamson has founded over 20 successful businesses. And his largest business accomplishment to date was the establishment of one of the most successful food service technology companies in the United States called Horizon Software International. And so I'm hoping that I can inspire you as our devoted followers of this show and people who may stumble upon it. This is a great show to be inspired with Bob Williamson and his story of a childhood that was very, very difficult, and then this amazing transformation. And then we're going to talk about, some of these business experiences he's had, what he's gleaned, what he's learned from the good, bad, and the ugly, the successes, and maybe a few failures. And then also the new thing he's working on called the Jesus Alliance. So, Bob, welcome to What If We've Been Wrong?
Well, thank you, Terry. I appreciate you inviting me.
Bob, I think your voice is one of the most laid-back voices I've ever heard. But when I read your bio, it's like, no, there's nothing laid-back about Bob Williamson. You've been on a go, right? It sounds like to me, ever since childhood. And I thought, well, let's start there, because your childhood did not dictate to you the direction of your life. I mean, something, happened later on. But you were on a fast, you were on a straight way, a highway to hell, weren't you? So fill us in a little bit about your childhood and what that was like. What were some of the difficulties?
Well, my family was very dysfunctional. My father didn't like me, and he took it out on me, physically abused me at about every opportunity, and it was a vicious style he had. He wanted to make me mean, and he succeeded with that. And it started at a very young age. When I was 5 years old, they realized something was really seriously wrong. They heard a commotion out back. I went back, and they went back to check on it. And I had nailed my pet rabbits by their neck up to the shed and was laughing. And it was just, it got worse. I mean, I fought all the time. I was in and out of jail and trouble. Started drinking at 12, was an alcoholic by 13. Started on drugs at 17. And I was very violent. I went to 19 different schools and about as many states. So I didn't ever have a friend, really. I mean, I might make a friend, but as soon as I make friends, we would move. I went to 3 different high schools. And so I became a loner, and there was no love in our family. It was just very dysfunctional situation for me.
Let me interject here. Was your father as equally as abusive to your mother?
No, he singled me out. I don't know why. He died a couple of years ago, and he took that secret to the grave with him. And I had one sibling, my brother Jim, and he wasn't to him. It was just me. I often thought maybe I was illegitimate, but that's not true because I look too much like him. And mm-hmm. so forth. So anyway, I never did find out, but he just didn't like me, and it started before I could have ever done anything wrong because I was too young, you know. So
wow, I didn't know about that nailing the rabbits to the shed. I didn't know about that story. I mean, you were only 5 yeah. years old, so it really goes to show how young, you know, a child can be formed. You know, with the bitterness of anger and all that, and you were just taking it out. So I remember you saying something about like a sawed off shotgun, and you were going straight to hell. What happened later on in your teen years?
Well, I was very violent. I started with this. I went to brass knuckles and a baseball bat, and then eventually a .357 Magnum and a sawed off shotgun. I was very violent, and my grandfather committed suicide, two of my uncles, and my only brother, Jim, and I wanted to commit suicide. I had lost all hope. I was married and divorced at a very young age and went into the military to see if that would straighten me out. It didn't. About 6 months later, I was in military prison awaiting court-martial for some very serious crimes. And they had some psychiatrists that evaluated me, and they asked me questions for 4 or 5 hours, and they had a big thick jacket of all the trouble I'd been in. And the next day they called me over there, the head psychiatrist, and asked me if I knew what a sociopath was, and I said, no, I don't believe so. And he said, what that means is you don't have a conscience, there's no remorse, or you're incapable of love. And if I had to guess, you're well on your way to becoming a serial killer.
Wow.
And I said, well, what do I do about it? And he said, there's nothing you can do. It's incurable. So we're recommending that you be discharged from the service. So that's what they did. Kicked me out of the military. And then I went out on the street. And I really got into drugs and distribution of them. I was a meth addict. And I would use heroin to come down. And became very, very violent and known on the street as someone that was just stone cold. If you mess with him, he'd kill you.
And, now, where were you living then, and how old were you?
I was 19 then. I left home at 17, I moved all over the country. I was in Haight-Ashbury. I was all over the place. But I settled in on New Orleans, Louisiana.
Okay.
And I was living in the French Quarter down there. And, I got in there, everything you can imagine. I'm very violent. I was committing all kinds of crimes, and the police knew about me, and they couldn't catch me. So they planted some drugs on me, and I went to Parrish Prison. They wanted to get me off the street. So I wasn't there very long, and their case fell apart, and they let me back out on the street again, and I didn't learn anything in prison except how to be a better criminal.
How to be, what did you say? How to be, a better criminal. So, gosh. So in jail, you learned how to be a better criminal. Oh, dear. Okay.
Right. So, and I became much more violent, if that was possible, committing more crimes. And I was using an enormous amount of drugs. I OD'd twice, and I very nearly died. My liver quit functioning for a week, and I was just a mess. And I had a connection with a guy. He was a cop, but he was really dirty. He was on the take, and I was selling drugs out of a drugstore that he and the mob down there owned together, and I was dealing pharmaceutical morphine to the heroin population. So he and I were pretty, you know, we were business partners in this deal, and one day he came down in the French Quarter and found me and told me they were looking for me everywhere, and they were going to get me off the street one way or the other. I took that to mean they were going to kill me. And he told me to get out of town and don't stop to pack. So I immediately left town. I had a pillowcase full of just a change of clothes and a toothbrush, really, and hitchhiked up to Atlanta, Georgia. And when I got up there, I sold a pint of blood, started working with winos to clean bricks for $15 a day. I was staying in a little flop house up there. And when I got enough money, I went out to a bar and got drunk and beat a guy half to death. And then not long after that, I got in a car that I had borrowed. And I went out and had a head-on collision and very nearly died. And I broke almost every bone in my body. And so I had 7 blood transfusions and very, very seriously injured. So I was in Charity Hospital in Atlanta, Grady Memorial, for quite some length of time. Well, I've been an insomniac all my life. I love to read, and by that time I'd read hundreds, if not thousands, of books. And
see, what, let me just interject here. I find that amazing that this drug addict, wild character that you were growing up in that kind of a home, that you had such a love for learning, a love for when would you read? You're stoned all the time.
I only sleep today still maybe 3 hours a night. So with that little amount of sleep, there's really, you know, not a whole lot to do. Normal people are sleeping. I was reading, you know. It was just, that's how it came about. I read all kinds of books on all kinds of subjects. So I was in the hospital, and I asked the nurse there if she would bring me some books to read. So she stopped by the library and gave me books to read. And the librarian started sending me a list of all the best-selling books. You know what the best-selling book in the world is? Of course, it was the Bible. Well, I wasn't a Christian. I didn't like Christians. I didn't like God. My mother was an atheist. My father was far from God. And I actually hated God. I didn't deny his existence because I had practiced witchcraft in New Orleans, and I'd seen it work, and I knew there was a spiritual dimension outside of what we could see and hear and feel and so forth. And so I didn't deny the existence of God. I had for a long time, but I had come around to actually believing, yeah, God exists, but I thought he was me. And I was judging that because of my life. I didn't blame myself, of course.
And I just want to repeat that you thought God was mean because of, obviously, how you had grown up, and you didn't know what love felt like, what it looked like, what it was supposed to be. Okay. All right. Keep on. So there you're in the hospital, and you've got nearly every broken bone, and the nurse delivers a Bible to you. Okay. Do you read it?
Yeah. Yeah, I started trying to read the Old Testament, and I found it too boring, and I was going to just abandon the project. And then this nurse, her name was Lydia, had brought me her personal Bible. So I was flipping through it, and I noticed in the New Testament she had all this stuff underlined and little notes scribbled everywhere. I mean, literally, she had that Bible marked from one end to the other in the New Testament. So I thought, well, I'll just read that. Maybe that's a better read. So I started reading it, and I was really surprised, because I found that Jesus was nothing like I thought he was. And I didn't know anything about him. I mean, I'd used him in swear words, but that was about it. And, but he was just full of love, and it didn't matter if you were a prostitute or somebody that was reviled by society. And all these religious people would say, oh, don't go talk to this person. That's exactly who you go to. Well, all my life, I've been called stupid and a black sheep. I never amount to anything, and I was scum. And a lot of people who were Christians have been engaged in this, and that was one reason I hated them.
So the Christians had... Well, I just want to make sure our guests today hear what you just said. Many times it was the Christians making you feel this way. Is that right?
Yeah. I was down in the French Quarter one time, and I was just walking along, minding my own business through Jackson Square, a little park. Where all the street people hung out. And this guy was standing on a box preaching, and these guys are all over the French Quarter. I didn't think anything about it. When I walked by him, he looked at me, and he said, if you don't change your ways, you're going to hell. And I turned around, and I said, are you talking to me? And I went over there, and I knocked him off that box, and I pulled out that 357. And I cocked it, and I put it right between his eyes.
Oh.
And my hand was just shaking with rage.
Uh-oh.
And I very nearly murdered that guy. I said, don't you ever say that to me again, or I'll kill you. Now, I had that guy said, hey, man, you look like you got something on your mind. Can I get you a cup of coffee? Can I pray with you or something? Well, you know, he didn't do that. He was just very condemning and whatever. And he was right. I was headed to hell, but I told him, I'll be right after you, buddy. So anyway, that was my impression of Christians, right or wrong, actually. It was just some of the people.
And Bob, right there, I'm going to pause for just a minute because we got to take a little commercial break, but we're coming right back with Bob Williamson, and we're going to kind of flush this out and then explore his fascinating transformation. So stay right where you're at.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutLoud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right, you're back with Terry Beatley and Bob Williamson, and where we cut off was, hey, Bob had just taken out his, what was it, 357 or sawed-off shotgun, Bob, and you had aimed it right in between this Christian standing on a box telling you you were going straight to hell, and you were about ready to kill him, but for whatever reason, you didn't, and you made clear that the man was right. You were going straight to hell, but he wasn't delivering the message with love, and that's what you were starving for. So pick it up from there, Bob. What happens after that?
Well, what happened after that, he wasn't standing on the box by then. He was laying on the ground, and I had a 357 between his eyes. For some reason, I didn't kill him. I don't know why, but I felt like it. But anyway, that was my impression. So when I was reading the Bible, Jesus was just the opposite. He was all full of love for everybody. Well, nobody in my life had ever told me they loved me. Nobody. And I was, at that point, I was probably 24 years old or so. I read with great interest all the Gospels, and I got over into Philippians, and I read 4:13, which says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Well, that infuriated me. I slammed that Bible shut and threw it on the floor and rang for Lydia, and when she came, I told her to get that Bible out of there. It was nothing but a lie. And she said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, it says right here I can do anything through Christ who strengthens me. I said, I'm a drug addict. I'm a meth addict. I've worn out the veins in my arms. I'm shooting up my legs. I've done horrible things. I've never done one good thing in my life that I can think of. And I said, the only way I'll change is to die and be buried in a pine box in a pauper's grave. And Lydia was a great big African-American lady, and she stood there with her hands on her hips, and she looked at me and screamed, Jesus is God. He can do anything he wants. He cured a leper, he walked on water, he fed 5,000 people, and he raised Lazarus from the dead. If he can do all that, it can change your sorry tale.
And this is Lydia who brought you the Bible, right? Lydia? She's the
right,
nurse who brought you the Bible. Okay.
And her language was much more colorful than that, if you can imagine.
No, I'm visualizing it. This nurse with her hands on her hips, and man, she was setting you straight. So how did you receive that message, though?
She picked up the Bible and put it back on my bed, sitting there thinking, well, if you have God, he did create me, and he can do anything he wants, obviously, but why would he want to? I'm scum. I'm a dope fiend. I'm nothing. Criminal. And I thought about him being crucified and how he had been beaten beyond recognition. Well, I've done that to people, and he had been whipped 39 times, forced to carry a cross all the way across town and nailed to a cross, set up on a hill with no clothes on in front of his mother, and he looks down and he says, Father, forgive them. Well, I couldn't understand that. I'd have said, Father, kill every one of them, But the thing that really clenched it for me was the two thieves on the cross, because I related to them.
Right.
They were criminals. One of them was making fun of him and saying, oh, man, if you're God, get yourself down. If you're, while you're at it, get us down. But the other one said, leave him alone. He's a good man. He hasn't done anything. We're criminals. We deserve our punishment. And then he told Jesus, or he asked Jesus, he says, when you enter your kingdom, remember me. And Jesus looked at him and said, this day, you'll be in paradise with me. Well, I wanted some of that. I mean, that guy was being executed, and he wasn't a choir boy. So, I figured if Jesus would save that guy, he would save me. And I wanted to change. I was miserable. I was lonely. I was full of hate and bitterness. And so I've been taking notes as I went through the Bible because my original intent was to disprove it. Mm-hmm. And I went back and it said, you know, you need to ask for forgiveness for your sins. So I tried to enumerate them. I couldn't remember them all. I said, you can, but please forgive me. And then it meant that Jesus was the Son of God, and I believed that.
And Bob, all this happened while you were still lying in the hospital bed recovering from the car accident?
Yeah.
Okay, so you were being crucified in the hospital bed. I mean, the old Bob Williamson was dying, and the new one was being born, right?
Yeah, exactly. And when I accepted Christ right there, I told him I would change my life. I wanted to follow him. Mm.
Okay, so Bob, it sounds like to me, like literally and or figuratively, you were being crucified in your hospital bed. The old Bob Williamson was going by the wayside, and Christ was beginning to make you into a new person.
Well, yeah, exactly. I had reached a point, you know, where I had become convicted of my sins, and then I confessed them and asked God to change my life and knew that Jesus was the Son of God. And for the first time in my life, I actually felt remorse for what I had done. I'd never done that before. Those shrinks were right. I was a sociopath. But after that, I felt the Spirit of God come into me and changed me right then and there in that hospital bed. Mm-hmm. I was in there for a few more weeks or months, actually, a couple months. And when I got out drugs, alcohol, I quit fighting, I quit smoking cigarettes, and my life just literally changed. I met my wife, who was nothing like me. She real goody two shoes. And
God does have a sense of humor.
And she'd lived in the same home for 24 years and decorated a Christmas tree and all that kind of thing. And I just told her, I lied to her. I just told her that I had gotten to college and ran out of money and came up there for a job.
And you're still married to the same lady, and she was Miss Goody Two Shoes, and we're talking about how God has a great sense of humor, aligning you with a woman who could help keep you straight. And I'm going to make a prediction here. I bet she made you live up to the bar. She raised up Bob Williamson, right?
Well, she's kind of a laid-back person. We've been married 47 years and got three sons and seven grandkids. So.
Wow.
And she was more like an anchor for me. I had a hard time initially because I had never been around stability. And she was a picture of stability. But she loved the Lord, and so did I. And then that's when I started my career. I didn't have any education to speak of, and no experience, no resume. So I had to start at the worst paying job in a paint plant. That was a big 18-acre paint plant. And I had the worst job in there out of 400 men and women. And my job was to keep up with the labels. But I was the first one there and the last one to leave and really tried to make something out of that job. I worked on it and figured out a way to save them $50,000 a year on paint labels.
Wow.
They put paint labels on every can they manufacture, of course.
Right.
So they promoted me, and I went to the next department, did the same thing. And anyway, I was promoted 8 times in the next 2 years, all the way into plant management. something nobody had ever done without a degree. And at that point, I decided that I wanted to start my own business. Well, everybody told me I didn't have any experience, didn't have any money, no education. It was impossible. And I just told them, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. That became my life's verse. And so I started, I borrowed $1,000 on my credit card. And 6 months later, I had built a multi-million dollar company. I had 186,000 customers and 7 distributors all over the world.
And what was this business about? Explain this. And actually, before you get into that, I've got one lingering question, and we'll leave the past behind. When Christ made you new, and you got out of that hospital, and you're beginning your new journey, did you have, like, physical, desires to go back to alcohol and smoking and all that? Or literally, it was like, whoop, you're done. This is over.
Well, I think that Satan tries to lure you back into that at every opportunity, particularly when things aren't going so well for you. So there were times when I was tempted, but it wasn't something that I couldn't bear. One thing about me is I continued reading the Bible. I've read the Bible, I don't know how many times, well over 100 times, cover to cover. I've read every translation. I read it every day. Mm-hmm. And the Bible helps to keep me strong. If I could name one thing that has helped me in my business career, my personal life, mm-hmm. everything, it is reading the Bible and studying the Bible on a daily basis. So,
okay, that's awesome.
Yes, I did experience temptation, but I didn't ever go back, particularly to drugs. It was harder for me to quit alcohol than anything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just because everywhere you go, everybody's drinking. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, I was just curious, and I know other people would be curious. Okay, so this multi-million dollar business that you start, what was it? Where you've got 186,000 employees and...
No, 186,000 customers.
Oh, I'm sorry, What were you doing?
Yeah, it was I invented airbrush paint that was like a technological breakthrough for artists. And then I went on and I invented several other products and things for the artist industry.
Well, but anyway, we don't have to go in great detail, but I'm curious. Just let our listeners know, what were these things? Because I think this is so important. Our kids are growing up in public schools, and so many of them are being taught just to be worker bees, and they're not being encouraged to be entrepreneurs. So we don't have to go in great detail, but what were some of the other products for artists that you invented?
Well, invented quite a few things I owned a urethane injection molding company, and I would make for the taxidermy industry, which there are thousands of them all over the world, hundreds of thousands of them, they would mount their animals and birds or whatever over urethane forms. So for deer and mammals and things like that, this had been done for quite some time. Well, I invented it for many other species. And then there were some chemicals that I came up with and just various other solutions. Okay. I think the key to being an entrepreneur is looking for problems and then finding ways to solve them for people. People will pay for that.
Well, and that was going to be one of my questions as we explore some of your other businesses is, you know, what's the key to being an entrepreneur? And I know there are many keys, but we'll get into that in a few more minutes. So, Bob, continue. Tell us more about the other businesses that came along, because you've been successful with over 20 businesses. I mean, that's rare.
Yeah. Well, I just started developing businesses primarily at first. I had seven businesses that were interrelated, like I had a publishing company, and I had a magazine, and I had I put on big shows all over the country, and I had a video production company, and I had a chemical manufacturing plant, a urethane injection plant, and paint plant, and various companies that were very related to what I was doing. But then, like, I've always been a health nut, or not always, but since my conversion to Christ, so I would work out with weights. And so I founded a company called Weight and Shape, that where I would sell health food and exercise equipment and all that kind of thing, and so forth and so on.
And we're talking about these were profitable businesses. I mean, you were successful in these, and
they were all profitable. Mm-hmm. And then I had I just reached a point where I was getting kind of really arrogant about it. I thought it was me and not the Lord. And he just jerked it all out from under me. I had 13 employees that embezzled roughly $1 million in current assets from our company. And it was all I could do to keep from going bankrupt because of this. And the Lord humbled me up pretty quickly with that. I didn't go bankrupt. I just worked very hard for 7 years, and I recovered from it and eventually sold those businesses.
And let me pause. I'm so sorry, Bob. Let me pause right there. It's time for another hard break, and we will be right back to better explore how you recovered and then these other amazing things that God had in store for you. So stay where you're at. We'll be right back.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right, you're back on with Bob Williamson, and I'm asking Bob about his journey with these different businesses. And so, Bob, you said you had 13 employees who embezzled over $1 million from you. Was this in, assets? Product they were stealing from you?
Yeah, it was my accountant, my purchasing agent, my warehouse manager, a whole bunch of real key employees, and they had stolen money, inventory. I had a printing press. They even stole the paper. They had started a company to try to compete with mine.
Oh my gosh!
It failed.
Wow.
It failed miserably, but. Anyway, I think the whole thing was just I had gotten too big for my britches, and I was walking around like I was arrogant. I had really gotten enamored with the money. I was making a tremendous amount of money. I went from making $30,000 a year to $30,000 a week net, and eventually to $300,000. So I was making so much money.
Wow.
And I don't know, I just let it all go to my head for a while there. And,
how old were you then?
I was probably 35 in there, somewhere,
okay.
35, 40.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So anyway, I worked very hard, but it was very difficult to fight my way out of that. My accountant, my lawyer, everybody told me just take bankruptcy. And I said, no, I'm not going to do it unless somebody sues me. And I wrote them all and told them what had happened and asked them to work with me, and I would pay them back every penny, and I did. Mm-hmm. And so then it became successful again, and I just decided I would sell it. By then, my boys were getting older, and they really liked computers, as I did. And I had taught myself how to write computer programs, and they were really good. So I decided to start a computer software company, that became the next really big business I had, and I built this company up over the next few years, and ended up selling it for $75 million.
It's amazing. I love these stories, you know? Okay, so $75 million.
So then I bought a 5,000-acre quail hunting place in northern Florida, and I built a resort on it. And we were holding weddings and quail hunting and corporate meetings and different things like that on it. Mm-hmm. And I just got a call from God at that point. I just felt that, you know, I spent all this time building a worldly empire, and I had gone to Israel, and I had really studied Solomon. Because he was the wisest and richest man the world ever knew. Nobody will ever be any wiser. And at the time, nobody was richer than Solomon. So I really read Proverbs and Ecclesiastes quite a bit. I read a lot of ancillary stuff about him. So anyway, I went to Israel. I couldn't wait to get over there because I wanted to see everything he had done.
Right.
And it was all in even ruins. I mean, it was covered in vines. There might be one post sticking up here or there. And I thought, well, this is what's going to happen to me. I'm not going to take my cars or my plane or my boat or anything with me. My portfolio, I'm just going there. And the only thing I'm going to take is the good and the bad I've done in life. And the bad would be covered by the blood of Christ, as it says in Hebrews, but the good would live on forever. I had gotten into ministry. I'd been in prison ministry for something like 30 years. But I had been writing a book on the fulfillment of the Great Commission, and it was a fictional account based on the Bible and of what would transpire. But I wondered exactly how it would happen and who would do it. When I was flying back, I'd been out in Montana working on it, and I just felt that God told me, well, why not you? Why don't you do something about it? And you know, I'm a businessman. I'm not a preacher, you know, and blah, blah, blah. But those arguments didn't work. So what I ended up doing, I sold all my interests in any businesses that I had anything to do with. And I started a ministry called the Jesus Alliance, which is it's designed to unite Christians and try to equip them with the knowledge they need that would motivate them to take action to do something. And the end result is that it would help to evangelize and disciple people. But cultural transformation is a big part of that, because the way our culture is going, it's hard to evangelize or disciple because there's so many Antichrist figures out there. So I basically got out of business. I sold my resort and took all my energy, effort, and money and transported into this endeavor.
And did you take did you take your wife too?
Yeah, she's been with me.
I know, I'm just kidding.
Everything.
Well, I'm on your website right now, and I actually want to read this so everybody grasps what you're trying to do here. So I'm on the Jesus Alliance website, and your mission statement reads like this: uniting, equipping, and mobilizing Christ's followers around the world to counter billions of negative and anti-faith media attacks with messages of truth, hope, and the unconditional love of Jesus Christ. Together, we can build a godly culture. And, Bob, I'm so glad we first started with your personal testimony. You know, because there aren't that many people who have that kind of a powerful testimony. You know what it's like to feel like dirt and scum and that you just feel like you should die to then become the man God intended for you to become. And so this is awesome. Okay, so you've sold everything. You've poured it into the Jesus Alliance. Where are you going to go with the Jesus Alliance? Or where do you think God's going to take the Jesus Alliance?
Well, our goal is the opposition controls education, the media, arts, and entertainment, about every sphere of culture in the United States and the world, actually. So what we're trying to do is counter it. There's not very many voices out there that are countering the negativity of their information.
I encourage everybody listening to go to Jesus Alliance website and watch the video that they have up, that you have up, about stopping child rape. Now, Bob, you and I were in a lengthy discussion one day about, you studied this issue of child, sex, human trafficking. And there are lots of organizations out there that, try to rescue the children out of sex slavery and then, deal with the psychological trauma. But it was interesting what you discovered is there was very little going on in terms of doing something to stop the demand. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Well, exactly. I was looking for some way to help reduce this problem or stop it entirely. And I'm very familiar with it. I have studied it. We've contributed and raised money for many organizations. There's like something like 4,000 of them, over 4,000. And they all deal with victims and trying to get them off the streets and the safe houses, rehabilitate them physically, emotionally, spiritually. And law enforcement is going after the cartels and the organized crime and the pimps, the ones that are making the money. But what I feel like the Lord told me one day, I was praying about it, and he almost knocked me out of the chair. He said, go after the demand. Mm-hmm. So it's these men that are 50 or 60 years old that desire to have sex with a 3-year-old or a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old. That hardly anything is happening to them. 26% get charges dropped. 68% get a suspended sentence. And the average term served is 1.5 years. Well, that's ridiculous for raping a child. Right. It used to be, back at the turn of the century, rape was a death penalty offense.
Yeah, so, Bob, before you go farther, mm-hmm. that's worthy of repeating. So if I caught this correctly, 26% of these child rape cases, the charges are dropped, 26%. 68%, the charges, they're suspended? What is it again?
Right. Suspended sentence.
Oh, suspended.
They get
sentence. Okay. 68% suspend. That's incredible. To rape a child and then they get a suspended sentence? The average length of stay in prison is 1.5 years. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Right. And people say, well, how can this be? Why is it? And the reason is these people are powerful. These pedophiles are powerful people. They're not like, truck drivers with tattoos all over them and earrings and piercings, your typical stereotype of a pervert. These are doctors and lawyers and judges and politicians and religious leaders and powerful people that are involved in this. So you know, and most of them have families. And so the judges are very lenient towards them. The prosecutors plea their cases down to lesser charges. And it's one of the things we're trying to do is create awareness to what's going on. And but we're finding that it's so difficult for somebody to think about a 50-year-old man raping a 3-month-old child or sodomizing one. And the average life expectancy of a child who gets caught up in sex trafficking is 4 to 7 years. They are beaten to death. They commit suicide. They OD because a lot of them are forced into heroin addiction to control them. And others die from HIV or things like that. So, and then if they do survive and they get rescued, their life is very, very difficult because trauma like that is something that people don't get over.
Right.
I'm still not over my father physically abuses me. And that happened many, many, many decades ago. So, So all I'm saying is we love children. We know Jesus loved children. But this, we aren't a sex trafficking organization. I mean,
right.
We have many, many different things. I just sat and I thought, what is the most evil sin on the face of the planet right now? And I believe it's child rape. What they're doing to these little children, snatching them off the street. People don't realize it's happening right here in the United States every single day.
Yeah.
All over the country. And
What are the latest estimates, Bob?
An epidemic.
Yeah, but right, it's epidemic levels. Do you have the latest statistics on how many children they think right now are ensnared in human trafficking in the United States? Do you know
nobody has a real good figure on it. Many of these kids are runaways or throwaways, and you can look at the missing and exploited children's website and see that it's hundreds of thousands of children that go missing, and a large portion of those are being exploited sexually. But they're not just runaways and throwaways. They'll actually pull up on a street in a van and grab a kid, put them in that van, and have them on the way to some distant city within 24 hours.
Right.
And never to be seen again.
Right.
And if anybody watches that video, they'll get a thorough understanding.
Well, what really attracted me to this, and again, Jesus Alliance is much broader than the stopping child rape, but like you said, it's one of the main issues that grieves the Lord's heart. Therefore, you're going to stand up for this. So it's trying to increase jail time for these men who rape children. And I think that's so vitally important. So I'm just going to encourage everybody right now, go to the Jesus Alliance website and check it out. Watch that video. It's professionally done. It's very, very moving. So, Bob, we're almost out of time. What else would you like people to know about the Jesus Alliance? You know, if you could, what's an action item you would like people to know about the Jesus Alliance?
Well, the Jesus Alliance is just trying to get people aware of the problem. If they watch that video, if they could share it with their friends, if they could go on our Facebook page and like something, we're sending things out every single day about this. And some of these do have action. Like the biggest problem we see right now, and the one that I am focusing on, is prosecutors and judges, and to a lesser extent, law enforcement. We have strong enough laws on the books. People just aren't enforcing them.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is start publicly outing the people who are arrested for this and the judges that let them off with these light sentences. If they know about a case like that that's happening in their community, contact the Jesus Alliance, and we will make it public. And
that's awesome.
And we think that that will help, and that's one thing anybody could do. They could also give money, of course, but, you know.
All right, listen, America, I'm interviewing Bob Williamson. I mean, what a living example of a renowned businessman, a serial entrepreneur who fell in love with Jesus Christ, sold it all, and is devoting it all to furthering the kingdom. And so, Bob, thank you for being on today. This is hopefully the first of a number of different interviews I can do with you. So thank you for being on. God bless you. God bless your work. Love you. And I hope America gets behind what you're doing.